15 minutes will be James Montgomery, and he'll be speaking on what's in your soil, characterizing and mapping spatial patterns of soil quality in Chicago's Lincoln Park neighborhood. Welcome.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. I want to present to you just a few results of an ongoing pilot study entitled What's in Your Soil. It's a collaboration between myself and several undergraduates in the Department of Environmental Science and Studies at DePaul. And the main collaborator is my former student, Rose Anderson, who recently graduated with her BS degree. Rose did all of the GIS mapping. Let's see. So, welcome to Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park is one of 77 official neighborhoods in the city of Chicago. It's located right here. Sorry for my spastic hand. The plus sign represents the Central Business District, or what we commonly refer to as the Loop. If we look at this in an expanded view, I want to point out just a few salient features. We have here is the Chicago River. The Chicago River, this is the north branch of the Chicago River, and the area just to the west of it is a planned manufacturing district that has a long history of industrialization. The kind of orange oval is the location of the DePaul Lincoln Park campus. The white line coming down the center is the Chicago Transit Authority's elevated line. We refer to this as the L. And the yellow line is the western boundary of the eponymous Lincoln Park. The objectives of this study were to characterize and map some spatial patterns of a suite of soil quality indicators. I'll present a few of those today. We do this by providing free soil testing for Lincoln Park residents and urban gardens who want to participate in the study. And a big reason for this is we're trying to promote improved town and gown relations. And finally, I want to give my undergraduate students an authentic research experience in the field and lab. So the photo on the lower left are three students who are currently enrolled in my environmental soil science class. They're collecting samples from a Lincoln Park resident who agreed to participate in the study. The center photo shows one of my students, Jen Thompson, collecting a core from a parkway. And the lower right is yours truly and one of our homeowner participants, Kate Jacobus. I'd also add that Lincoln Park is the most affluent neighborhood in the city with a median household income of well over $150,000. So when we began this study, it was just to see what's there. So I had six students. We had a systematic sort of sampling scheme. We laid a regularized grid over Lincoln Park. I sent them out on their bikes, and they towed little trailers behind with augers and everything they needed. And I said, I only want you to sample from parkways, and I want you to sample from 60 parkways. So what they did is they took a quarter meter square quadrant and laid it down and composited at least three samples in each and brought them back. And then we decided to expand to residential properties. And the way we did this was I wrote a letter of invitation, and we mailed them out, or one of my students literally walked around the DePaul neighborhood and stuffed mailboxes. And we got about a 20% response rate. So I call this more convenience sampling. We're kind of slowly radiating outward from the DePaul campus. Here's just another view of our sample sites. And if you look at the center, you can see this kind of heavy cluster of residential sites. There's some parkways in there as well. And most of the maps will focus on that area. We collected native soils. I said, do not collect from raised bed gardens, and I'll tell you why that is a little bit. So down about 15 centimeters with a bucket auger, and then they also collected cores down to about 30 centimeters. We made a variety of field measurements, temperature, compaction, bulk density, variety of lab measurements, and what I'll focus on today will be the phosphorus as well as the lead, both total lead and bioaccessible lead using the simplified PBET method. So what is a parkway? Well, in Chicago, a parkway is defined as that strip of land between the sidewalk and the street. And the picture up here, you can see, this is a typical parkway in Lincoln Park. It's a lot of bare soil. It's littered with all kinds of anthropogenic refuse. But some people actually claim their parkways. The center photo here is a very nice landscaped parkway. But one of the things I found out was after we did the sampling of the parkways, well, technically the parkway is owned and managed by the city of Chicago, and technically you're supposed to have a permit, and technically I didn't. And so now we do surreptitious soil sampling. I don't really think Mayor Rahm Emanuel is going to care. So these soils are mapped as Samants, Loamy Orthents, Urban Land. They're developed on a variety of landforms and in a variety of parent materials. This is a graph showing you the frequency of construction, okay, versus the number of homes in our sample area. And there's four time periods that are very important to consider when interpreting these data. Arrow A is a very seminal year in the history of Chicago. On October 8, 1871, began the Great Chicago Fire. The burn zone extended north of the loop into Lincoln Park and stopped just short of the DePaul campus. The upshot of this is after this happened, the Chicago City Council passed an ordinance that banned wood frame construction. And this began the period of what we call red brick construction in Chicago. By 1890, Lincoln Park had been annexed into the city of Chicago, and we began to see a construction boom. Arrow B points to a period of time, really in U.S. history, when there was a lot of disinvestment in the inner cities and white flight out to the suburbs. And so in Lincoln Park at this time, it became very run down. However, by 1980, we began to see urban pioneers moving back in and rehabbing these homes. And this began the wave of gentrification. And in the late 1990s, we saw another wave of redevelopment. These were the young urban professionals who were moving in, and they weren't just buying up the property. They were ripping down the homes, and they were building homes like this, which we call the McMansion phase. And this is a very typical home in Lincoln Park that sells for probably around $3 million. So just a little bit. We look at phosphorus. These error bars are standard error of the means. And you can see that there are significant differences in the means of SRP between residential and parkway. But look at the range in values here. This, to me, is phenomenal, but maybe not too unexpected because, let me get to that in a minute. Here's a heat map created by Rose, and you can see where we have the highest density of sample locations. There are just really distinct sort of bullseye in SRP values. Well, if you can afford to buy a home like this, and these homes are for sale, by the way, in Lincoln Park, then you can afford to hire these folks to come in and maintain your lawn. And these lawns are like the size of a postage stamp, but they pay good money for this. So that's not terribly surprising. Let's look at lead. There's no significant difference in mean values between residential and parkways, but look at the range. And if you look at those max values, those were both from homes that sold for over $3 million. Whoops. We look at the heat map. You see a high concentration down here, right by the river. Well, this part of the North Branch has over 150 years of industrial legacy, metal plating plants. There is today one of the largest metal recycling plants in the U.S., Sims Metal Recycling, that recycles, among other things, lead-acid batteries. This is also probably due to the period of lead deposition from the years of leaded gasoline. But I want you to notice, look at the trend underneath the L-track here. Oh, the L-tracks. Here is a section of L-track near the DePaul campus. It's about 100 years old. And you can imagine that during its lifetime, this thing got slathered with lead-based paint up until paint was banned in the mid-1970s. But look what people have done here. Now, you can look at this in a lot of different ways. They've reclaimed this. They've put in trees and some ornamentals. Here's a Cubs World Series poncho. And the thing about this, the things that's sad about this, is that sites like this, all along the L tracks, are sites of homeless enclaves. So people are coming into contact with lead-contaminated sediment and potentially paint dust. Percent bioaccessible, we do see differences in the mean values between residential and parkway. But interestingly, what we've seen so far is that the kind of the bullseye here doesn't conform with what we saw in the total lead. But there is an interesting story here. Look at this triangular area. This is referred to as the Old Town Triangle neighborhood within Lincoln Park. Okay, and it's bounded by three streets, Lincoln Avenue, Armitage Avenue, Halstead Street, and I'll even throw in Fullerton. And these are four of the most highly vehicular trafficked roads in Chicago and have been historically. So I'm assuming that what we're seeing here in large part is the legacy of lead deposition from leaded gas. Still working this out. So some observations. We know our soils here are saturated with nutrients. Okay, there, many of them are above the 400 ppm threshold set by EPA. We don't see a correlation between the age of the home and total lead or percent bioaccessible lead, okay, unlike other studies. But we see distinct hot spots. And we can't just correlate soil lead concentrations to current land use. I totally agree with Nick Basta. You have to look at past land uses, particularly in gentrified communities such as Lincoln Park that have an industrial footprint. I made some general observations. It's challenging to sample in residential communities like Lincoln Park, although we're getting better at getting people to sign up to participate. But folks, these people have a real fear of lead. I've had people tell me, look, you can sample my soil. I don't care if you analyze it for lead, but don't tell me the results. And the reason for that is they are very afraid if that information gets out to a potential home buyer that it's going to kibosh the deal. So there's an ethical consideration that we have to take into account here. Homeowner soil knowledge. Oh boy, was this interesting. They basically don't have much knowledge of what's in their soil. But they want to learn, and that's why they signed up. But I'm also saying that there's a mythology about urban soil. So all due respect to the folks here from New York City, you know, I have soils here that showed very little lead. But these people think that their soil is already contaminated with lead. And I suppose that's a useful heuristic when you're growing, you know, vegetables, just put them in a raised bed. And finally, we need to systematically characterize and map spatial patterns of soil quality indicators. In Chicago, we have over 850 urban gardens. This means there's a large potential for people to come into contact with potentially contaminated soil, but that's what we need to find out. So our next steps are going to be to continue soliciting homeowner participants. We're expanding to other neighborhoods. Going to develop and conduct a survey of homeowner soil knowledge, and I'm real happy to report that I just received funding from DePaul to conduct a lead health fair in one of our low-income communities, and it's going to feature Soil Shop. And I'll leave you with this. In Chicago, there's been an investigative series written by the Chicago Tribune reporter Michael Hawthorne focusing on childhood lead poisoning. And if you look down here, these are the screaming headlines. This woman in the lower left has 9 kids. All of those kids have lead poisoning. And when you read these articles, the narrative is, well, they contracted it by inhaling lead dust inside of homes. All these people live in rent-subsidized homes managed by the Chicago Housing Authority. Well, here's what's missing. There's absolutely no mention of the contact of these kids with lead in soil. We don't know what the soil is like around these kids' homes. We don't know what it's like around their school. We don't know what it's like around the playgrounds and the playlots that they go to. We just don't know. And in Chicago, no one wants to talk about lead in soil. I've been shut down too many times by people saying, Well, we follow HUD guidelines. When I asked them, do you test the lead for soil for lead? We follow HUD guidelines. I mean, just keep repeating that until you want to gouge your eyes out. Okay. So as a division, UAS, I think, can take a real leadership role in educating people about exposure pathways of lead, and I'm calling this the epidemiological lead gap. Thank you very much. Yes.
Are you guys doing any work in phytoremediation?
No, not a bit. Nick.
I really enjoyed your talk. I think we have an we still have an epidemiological crisis, don't we? When you look at East Chicago,
yes.
All these children having lead poisoning. 2016, we have lead poisoning, lead contamination with children in Cleveland. You're right, nobody wants to talk about it. In fact, we sent a proposal one time to Region 5, they said all the lead problems have been addressed in Region 5. That coordinator, that administrator is no longer, I don't know what they did with her, maybe they sent her with the person who was drinking wine at the penthouse in Las Vegas somewhere. But you know, the thing is, really, all the lead problems, what good news? All the lead problems are solved in Chicago,
well, and that's also absolutely criminal what's happened in East Chicago,
yes.
Indiana. And I just met an ecological economist who said, urban soil, there is no such thing as urban soil. And lead, so what? I mean, this is what I commonly run into with people in the city of Chicago. When I reached out to Chicago Housing Authority, I own a building that I live in, and I'm in the Section 8 program. Okay, which is rent subsidized. I have a renter. When I asked my inspector, do you test the soil for lead? He goes, are you kidding? He said, now if a kid presents symptoms of lead poisoning, then the Chicago Department of Public Health will come out. I said, dude, if a kid is presenting symptoms of lead poisoning, it's too late anyway.
Right.
Joshua. Good point. Susan. Yes. You know, if you were politically connected back in the day, you could have rebuilt with wood, but most of it was red brick, and I think that's exactly why we're seeing that. Plus, homeowners, when we kind of collected some basic information, you know, how old is your home? We double check that with you know, property tax stuff. But when you would ask them, what have you done to landscape? You know, what, most of them don't know. Well, I think the previous owner might have done this. Or a common refrain was, I don't know. You'll have to ask my landscaper. You know, and this is what I'm saying. I'm not dissing them. They just really don't know about their soil. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we certainly did that with the parkway soils. And I've been known to be a guerrilla soil scientist, so yeah, yeah. Nick.
Can I ask you one more? We found something interesting with those. In Cleveland, we actually went and sampled some soils, and we did find, like, you said, gardens, people over by the so there's a lot of phosphorus, and we also found some lead. But when people do total lead, they never look at whether or not the phosphorus is already remediated that way.
Right.
So we took some of those samples and gave them to Kirk Shetland, and we took them to St. John. We found 30-40% of the lead had already became pyrimorphine.
Mm-hmm.
So they already had done the remediation. I was looking at your bioaccessible number. You used pH 2.5, right?
Yes.
Everyone should use pH 2.5, do not use EPH 1.5. But if you use the 2.5 pH, it'll be a nice reflector. And maybe these people have all that phosphorus in their hair. They've done remediation of lead and they don't even know it.
Yeah.
I mean,
good point.
But that might be an interesting thing to do with some of your samples, your IP ones.
Okay.
To see the synchrotron if you got remediation done. Yeah.
Yeah, the process will move as well, so it looks good. It'll be lower.
Yeah.
So the policy thing is a big issue. So if in addition to getting more information out about the epidemiology, I think lead policies need to change because there's a huge disincentive not to test because of the property value, right? So
right.
That's a huge issue. But so one thing, we did some testing in Milwaukee and ran into issues where you weren't allowed to take a soil sample, but with XRF, that's a way that you can get around those regulations. You can't take the soil with you, but you can get a total. And
That's high tech for efficient sampling.
We had a circumstance where we sent San Antonio people sent samples. They were actually using nice black glassy lead slag for landscaping on their $10, $20 million properties, right? And some were determined this was lead. And it became a real fiasco. So once it gets identified, nobody wants to know if there's lead. And so actually with the soil test, the Mailer soil test, what we've been trying to lead with people is send us your sample to test it, your garden, for first nutrients, and then we run the metals in the background. And if we see a problem, we tell them, and they're comfortable with that. I've met with the city planners in Cleveland. They definitely don't want Cleveland tested for lead. I mean, I was told that people sign a waiver and that's the end of it. So, and I just kind of chuckled and said, do you think that'll hold up in court? And it has so far. So,
Yes.
So, one thing for me is, in a way, it's kind of irresponsible to test and identify high lead sites without being able to offer a solution of some kind.
Yes.
So, like the New York City Soil Bank, and later today I'll be talking about the Tacoma program. One of the things in Chicago is now the biosolids program is allowed to sell within the city and they're making compost. And so to have a solution that can be offered along with a problem identification seems like a wonderful next step or way to go.
So I didn't mention that, Sally, but what we did is I wrote a report to each homeowner describing the data and telling them things that they could do, particularly around the lead. And basically it was, you can keep bare soil covered, keep compost on it. So you're absolutely right, and that's actually one of the things my students are doing actually tomorrow is developing a letter for the homes that they're testing that they can send to the homeowner and telling them things that they can do to mitigate and minimize exposure to lead. You're absolutely right. That's a real ethical issue when it concerns lead and other heavy metals. All right, break time.
Yeah, almost over.